What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's Adamac Sports.
Instagram is also Adamac Sports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It is episode 210. We're 2 weeks into the NFL season. And of course, we got some overreactions and underreactions coming. That's going to be sick. I mean, just a completely crazy case of football we had. Before that, though, we got baseball, of course. But I'm really excited to talk football with you because we've seen multiple weeks now. We kind of know what direction these teams are heading into.
Or we don't know at all, which is the crazy part about the first 2 weeks of the NFL season. We've seen teams play good. In the first 2 weeks, we've seen teams play really bad in the first 2 weeks, but we've also seen a ton of, oh, this team played good this one game, and then all then, you know, maybe something changed in the second game or flip-flopped. They played bad in the first one, then good in the second one. And I think it's a perfect example with our two teams that we'll obviously talk about here in the opener. And I'll get right into mine with the Raiders and their big win against the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday to get the first win of the season. If you told me that this team would win this game after week one's performance against the Chargers, I'd say no way in hell. We're playing a Ravens team that just lost in the opener. They don't lose at home often. They're going to be, you know, pissed off and just steamroll the fuck out of us. And that's kind of what I expected. And the first half just played really slow. There wasn't really much going on. There's, I think, five field goals, and that was the only scoring between any of the teams in the first half. In the second half, things just changed. The Raiders' defense got a couple of stops. They also allowed a couple touchdowns, but mainly played pretty well. The offense for the Raiders, and especially Gardner Minshew, really picked it up. I had a couple points that I wanted to talk about, though, and the first of which is Brock Bowers. In his second NFL game, he had 9 catches for 98 yards and is tied for second in the NFL with catches right now at 15. This kid's ridiculous, man. We saw Gronk and Devontae Adams talk about it today on the Up and Adams show, where Devontae was just saying that he's got the ability to be, you know, the best tight end in the league, and Gronk just added on to it by saying that he thinks that he has the pass-catching ability to be a better player than what Gronk was. And for Gronk to say that about another player, it's pretty crazy, because usually the old guys or the unks, whatever you want to call them, are like pretty hesitant to say, yeah, the young guy is up
very exclusive,
be better than them. Exactly. But for Brock Bowers to get that honor, especially from Gronk and a guy who has one of the most dominant tight end careers of all time, was pretty cool to see. And it shows that he is the real deal. And then the other point that I want to talk about is Max Crosby. The gameplay is one thing. I mean, he had 2 sacks, you know, pretty stereotypical Max Crosby game, just destroying everything, whether it's in the pass or in the run for the Ravens. But his leadership is something that's just uncanny when it comes to this Raiders team and the importance that he brings in that. I was talking to one of my friends, and I think I spoke this to you as well, too, and mentioned it, saying that Max Crosby is now getting to the point where he might be the greatest Raider I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. And that lifetime spans from 2001 and on. You can kind of cut off the first 10 years there because I wasn't, you know, really able to take in football the way that I am now when I was, you know, super young. So the competition is Khalil Mack, Charles Woodson, I'd say, and those are the only two. I don't think Devontae's been here long enough, and some of the other guys maybe not. His most spectacular performance, but what Crosby does on and off the field, leader, you know, whether it's just his play or not, he's just absolutely ridiculous in all facets of the game. So I think what we're seeing right now is a generational player for the Raiders, and definitely if we were to retire numbers, 98 would be up in the Raptor at some point, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years once he's done. But regardless, we're moving on to week 3. We play the Panthers in week 3. Browns in week 4, Broncos in week 5, Steelers in week 6, and that means that we got a winnable stretch of football. Hopefully we come out with the three of the next 4 would be, I don't think it's too optimistic. I think that's pretty real to say that we'd be able to win those games. So that would mean that we'd be at a 4-2 spot going into a game against the Rams, who are beat up, before we go on to our gauntlet. We'll see how that goes. I don't want to look that too far in the head, though. We still got to beat the Panthers and Andy Dalton this week. Whether it's hard or not, who knows? But we got to get it done and move on to 2-1 before we go to week 4.
Absolutely. A lot of similarities with our two teams, of course, like you mentioned. But this was a tough one in Nashville for the Jets defense after losing a couple of their captains, DJ Reed, CJ Mosley, and now Jermaine Johnson out for the season with an Achilles. It's just brutal for this squad. But the youngster Will McDonald stepped up for him. He had three sacks and a forced fumble to finish off Will Levis. And they gave Rodgers and the offense another chance to get the job done. The Rodgers to Garrett and, of course, Lazard connections are clearly still there and improving every week. But really, the split backfield, Breece Hall, Braylon Allen, it's so awesome to watch. I'm really excited for what's next with this offense. A little nervous for the defense, though. They got New England on a short week. They can always shut you down. London against the hot Minnesota Vikings and Sam Darnold. And then we come back Monday night against Buffalo after that. So very interesting stretch. A lot of guys will be tested for sure.
That game against Minnesota is week 4.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty early. Anyways, moving on to pretty much the only MLB that we'll talk this week, which is just our normal player pitcher rookie of the week. This week's kind of a one-off for the MLB. I think we'll get more into it as the playoffs, you know, ramp up. We'll definitely do a playoff prediction. We'll definitely, you know, do our power rankings again. But this week, with all the crazy stuff going on in the NFL, felt like we should dedicate most of the episode to the National Football League and a little bit of college ball as well, too. But with that being said, for the MLB, the player of the week, Skyler, who did you choose here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aaron Judge. He's back. He reached base 11 times in 16 at-bats. He hit two more homers to end the slump, and he's got the Yankees back up 3 games over Baltimore after a great comeback week.
Yeah, I didn't think we saw any ridiculous weeks from a hitter where we didn't see like a 2-dot OPS. We didn't see somebody hit 5 homers or anything like that. So I went with the guy who was playing slightly better than his whole season output, and that's Brent Rooker. But just the model of consistency this season, pretty much, where he went 10 for 27, hit his 36th, 37th, and 38th homers of the year, had 10 RBIs to raise his total to 107, 108 now, two stolen bases as well, too, to get him up to 9 stolen bases on the season, an OPS over 1,000. Just what this guy's done for the last 3 months specifically has been ridiculous. The whole season, regardless, has been great. But he's shown that this isn't just, you know, a fluke that's going on. He made the adjustments, and he's a guy that can hit 300 now in the big leagues. And if you even told me that last year, I wouldn't have believed you. And he had a great season last year. So to see the jump from last year's Brent Rooker, which was great, and an all-star, to this year's Brent Rooker, who wasn't an all-star, is pretty crazy. He's a stud, and I'm happy we have him. Pitcher of the week.
For the first time in Immaculate Sports history, we got a 3-way tie for the pitcher of the week. I'm going with the 3 San Diego starters, Dylan Cease, Yu Darvish, and Joe Musgrove, because they all went 6-inning shutout this week. Dylan Cease has been a Cy Young candidate all season, but the other 2 guys to dominate as well is massive news for San Diego heading into the playoffs. They're on a 4-game win streak, thanks to these guys, only 3.5 back of the Dodgers now.
Yeah, there's again another weird week for pitcher of the week too. Just like a player where there wasn't, you know, a no hitter, or there wasn't like 8 shutout with 12 strikeouts. So we kind of just had to go based off of interpretation. And I chose Corbin Burnes as my guy. 7 shutout innings, only 2 hits allowed, 1 walk. Just another good start for a guy who's at the top of the Baltimore rotation. Rookie of the week.
I'm going with the big lefty out of Georgia Tech. That's Brant Herder of the Tigers. Herder quietly has had a great rookie season in a long relief role for Detroit. And when their starter went down early, he threw 5 2/3 shutout, 0 hits, 8 Ks to beat the O's 1-0. They're only 1.5 games back of Minnesota for that wild card spot. And a guy I did not know much about came through big this week.
Yeah. I'm also taking Brant Herder as my rookie of the week for his 5 2/3 nearly perfect ball. Tigers held a perfect game into the 8th inning that game, I want to say, before there was a walk from Herder, and then eventually a triple from Gunnar Henderson off of Tyler Holton to break up the no hitter in the bottom of the 9th. Regardless, Tigers won that game. They've been on a great run ever since July started, just like the A's, and right in the thick of it, like you said, only 1.5 games out. So Brant Herder, my rookie of the week. Taking us to the NFL now with our player, defensive player, and rookie of the week here. Who did you choose as your player of the week, Scott?
This week wasn't as difficult for me to decide. I'm going to go with Kyler Murray for my player of the week. The perfect passer rating in their blowout win against the Rams. And he really was perfect. No mistakes, only 4 incompletions, 3 touchdowns. I think they really got it figured out in Arizona.
Yeah, and he could add some more with them maybe not taking off the gas a little bit once they got to the fourth, just it being a blowout. I went in a different direction though. I went with Alvin Kamara for his insane performance against the Cowboys over the weekend. On the ground, he had 20 rushes for 115 yards and 3 touchdowns. Through the air, he had 2 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown. One of those being, I believe, a 57-yard screen pass that he took to the house. Saints offense is great so far in the first 2 weeks. We'll talk about them more specifically in a bit, but Alvin Kamara was a huge reason why that they did what they did against the Cowboys this past weekend. Defensive player of the week.
Jesse Bates played amazing last night for Atlanta. He's got to get an honorable mention, but I'm going to give this one to Aiden Hutchinson. Despite the loss, he had 4.5 sacks, forced fumble against Tampa. Just another ridiculous week where he's unguarded. He's really taking the next step here. I know we talked about a couple guys for DPOY, but the list gets longer every season, it seems like. Some ridiculous players off the edge.
Yeah. I went with co-players of the week, and it's pretty tough to do when somebody has 4.5 sacks. It would be 2 players that had that level of performance, but I think starting off with Aiden Hutchinson, his 4.5 sacks, 1 forced fumble performance that he had, even in a loss for Detroit, was huge. He now leads the NFL in sacks. But a guy who I've always been a huge fan of, and Fred Warner, had a ridiculous game against the Minnesota Vikings. He had a sack, 2 forced fumbles, one of them at the goal line, and a crazy interception of Sam Darnold, all mixed in within there. This guy's been the best middle linebacker in football for a couple of years now. I think there's only one guy comparably on his level, and that's DeMario Davis. But outside of that, this guy's in a league of his own. He's, you know, going to go down as a Hall of Famer once his career is all said and done. Rookie of the week.
Malik Neighbors also deserves an honorable mention here. He had 18 targets, which is just ridiculous. He gets Washington. Awesome for my fantasy team. But I'm going with Maserati Marv. 4 for 130, 2 touchdowns. He really looked the part. And I don't think anyone's going to be questioning his sprint speed anymore. He looks like Randy Moss.
Yeah, it was definitely a two-horse race in this. It was either Neighbors or Maserati. And I decided to go with Neighbors. I thought his statistics, whole complete package, was slightly a bit better than Marv. 10 catches, 127 yards and a touchdown, like you said. Like 18 targets is ridiculous. Sure, you know, the point against him would be like, oh, he's the only guy, you know, that's throwing the ball every single time. But I mean, when the defense knows that this guy's getting the ball and they still can't stop him, that shows that you're a damn good player. And Malik Neighbors is exactly that. They already unretired a number for him before he even played a snap in the NFL. So that just shows what the Giants think about him. And now we're getting to see his talent on full display in the National Football League now. Moving on, though, to overreaction, underreaction. I believe we have 10 things here. It's 10 different things we're going to overreact, underreact, or maybe just write on, and we're going to start off with the one that everybody wants to talk about, and it's the Carolina Panthers going 0-17. The first 2 games have been rough, to put it lightly. 13 points scored and 73 points allowed, good enough for a negative 60 point differential. It's gotten so bad they already benched the first overall pick Bryce Young after only 18 games in the league for Andy Dalton, a guy who's been in the league for 18 years. I don't know. Canales, maybe he's feeling the pressure. Who knows? Do you think that it's an overreaction, underreaction, maybe just right, that the Panthers are going to go 0-17?
This is definitely not an overreaction, because there is no blue chip talent on this entire team other than Derek Brown, who's hurt right now. The Bryce Young factor, though, is pretty crazy. If you want to get into that later, too, we can, because Dave Canales, a so-called offensive guru, has seen enough after just 2 games. This could be a situation where this guy has to play in the UFL for a couple years, because I can't see anyone trading for him. Zach Wilson, Mac Jones went for 7s, and those guys actually have won a lot of games, surprisingly. I can't see how Bryce Young has any trade value. But anyways, Carolina plays in the NFC South. There's a bunch of veterans trying to get film. I say Andy Dalton gets a win or two, but you're not too far off.
Yeah, I said slight overreaction, and I think that changed once I saw that Andy Dalton was going to be the quarterback, because you know a guy like Andy Dalton who's not afraid to sling it at this point in his career. He's not afraid what people think about him. He's already pretty much done everything he needs to do to, you know, say he is what he is in the NFL. but I think it's a slight overreaction for them to go 0-17. They're really, really bad, but it's also pretty hard to lose all 17 games in the NFL season. There's going to be a week where you go against someone who's struggling or, you know, just has a really bad game and you find a way to pull out a victory. And usually we see those teams do, you know, once it gets to week 14, week 15, week 16, like we saw with the Jets the one year that they beat the Rams. I thought pretty much everybody thought you guys were going to go winless. And then next thing you know, you win a game there that you weren't supposed to win at all. So, you never know exactly how these things go, but I think with Andy Dalton, they definitely have a better chance. And I saw something on ESPN that I do want to talk about before we get into our next take. And it was, they were overreacting, underreacting. I believe it was with Jeff Saturday and somebody else. And their headline was, Bryce Young will never be a starting quarterback again in the league. What do you think about that one?
As of right now, I don't think that's crazy. They're going to need to... I mean, it's hard to say what exactly they need to do, but he definitely needs to fix some things or no one's going to touch him with a 10-foot pole, right? He's not as bad as Trey Lance looked, but that's the Cowboys. That's a whole nother conversation, right?
Yeah, and I think something with Bryce Young, it feels like he's kind of got the yips a little bit right now where he's just so used to being hit or, you know, so scared that something's going to happen to him that he's just – second guessing every single throw that he makes, whether it's even a screen or, you know, a short little drag route or whatever it is, like he's unable to make those throws. I do think he'll end up getting a shot somewhere at some point at some time, whether it's back in Carolina or not, who knows. But this guy was the number one overall pick for a reason. I don't think it's something that they should, I don't think they should completely give up on him, even though he's looked really bad because everything around him has been really bad as well too. And I think, you know, just reset the mental, give him a couple of weeks, and then, you know, if Andy Dalton's not winning games, throw him back out there because you can't just give up on your number one pick right now because you're not going to win games with Andy Dalton regardless with how your team is right now.
His cap hit's about $15 million, I heard.
Well, you got to figure it out this year. That's another reason to play him, right? Next up, the Ravens missed the playoffs. They're 0-2. I don't think anybody saw this coming. Maybe with the loss to Kansas City, but obviously nobody expected them to lose to the Raiders. So the headline, do the Ravens miss the playoffs?
I think this is going to be a slight overreaction for me. Cincinnati is in much worse shape right now, even though they did get the win in week one, right? No, they lost to New England. They're 0-2 too. Well, they both had to play Kansas City. It's weird. We're witnessing an era where the kickers are more reliable than most of the quarterbacks. And for that reason, I'm going to throw all my chips into the basket of a two-time MVP winner. And I think at some point they're going to figure out how to score 30 a game. It's just a rough start.
Yeah. I think it's definitely an overreaction. I think the Ravens will be fine long-term. I still think they're the best team in the division, better than Cincy, definitely better than Cleveland, and for sure be better than the Steelers, even with their 2-0 start. I think they just need to figure out how to exactly use Lamar and Henry at their best. I think it was very weird to see how they navigated the run game against the Raiders this past week where they got up and didn't decide to use Henry downhill as much as I expected, and they did not use Lamar as a runner at all. And I think it's a weird spot because they're kind of completely opposite runners. Henry's super downhill, and Lamar's kind of just – I wouldn't say like scrappy, but like he just does things on his own, is able to play make. And those are kind of two polar opposites when you know, the downhill run game is very, you know, intentional and you purposely do that and stuff. And Lamar's kind of, you know, doing stuff on his own most of the time. So they got to figure out how to do that. I don't know if shotgun runs is the answer. I don't know if it's pistol. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. But you got to find a way because those two guys can win you games even when you have, you know, maybe not the craziest receivers, but they still got a good group out there as well, too. They got a good defense. I think the Ravens will be just fine. It's just a really rough start. Next up, this team's doing just fine. We're talking about the Vikings. And the thing here is, will the Vikings win 10-plus games?
This is also going to be an overreaction for me. I'll be rooting for Sam Darnold all season. Most of us knew the talent wasn't the problem with him. It's the mental game holding him back. But Minnesota has a brutal stretch coming up that's going to give them a real wake-up call. It's Houston at Green Bay, Jets in London, Detroit, Rams, Indianapolis. They could realistically be 3-7 at midseason. So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm saying it's an overreaction as well. I don't think it's impossible, being as they are 2-0 right now. But I think the Niners win is not something as crazy as we need to make it sound, because Brian Flores has just historically had the number of the Niners whenever they've gone up against each other. We saw it last year when they lost that game on Monday Night Football, I want to say. We saw it a couple years ago when the Dolphins just took it to the Niners like pretty badly when they weren't suspected to in 2021 or 2022. And the thing is still, like, Sam Darnold's making mistakes out there. It's not like he's playing carefree football, or not carefree football, but mistake-free football and just, you know, 77% completion rate or something like that. Like, he's not doing that. He's still making mistakes. He's still going to make bad throws. The talent's there. He's going to make some plays, but he's definitely going to make some game-losing ones. I mean, especially with their schedule being tough, like you said, I don't think we're looking at a team that's going to make the playoffs or win double-digit games. Next one, kind of back to the Ravens here, talking about the Rams, and the headline is the Rams missed the playoffs.
Yeah, their best two players are out for an extended period of time. This is definitely not an overreaction. I think Stafford keeps them in the hunt, just like he did last year with similar injuries, but this defense is going to implode at some points. I definitely jumped the gun on them, picking them to win around 12 games or whatever we did a couple weeks ago. So things are not looking good for the Rams.
Yeah, I say it's accurate. I think, especially if no Cup and no Puka, it's for maybe 4 to 5 weeks of both those guys. Like, it's going to be really tough to find wins during that period, because I know Matthew Stafford's great, but if you're throwing to Tyler Johnson and DeMarcus Robinson as your top two receivers, it's going to be pretty damn tough. Jordan Whittington as well, too. Colby Parkinson, tight end. You don't have a guy out there that you – I've seen him really have trust with in the past. I think maybe DeMarcus Robinson's probably at the highest of that list, but we'll see how he navigates that on Matthew Stafford specifically. But their defense as well hasn't been the group that it was last year specifically and the years past. And, you know, maybe you could just say they don't have Aaron Donald anymore, and it could be that simple. But you're seeing some play from the other guys as well, too, that just doesn't seem up to par as what we saw last year. They have a tough schedule as well, too. And I think it's completely accurate to say that the Rams missed the playoffs this year. Next up, staying in LA, the Chargers are a top 10 team in the NFL.
They're not a top 10 team, but I did have them 15 last week. If we did this again, they'd probably be in the 12 to 15 range. So I'm going to say they're pretty close right now. You know, that's why I had them beating Vegas. I'm sorry. I know, but they have a great quarterback. They're building through the trenches, and that's very important when you're early in the rebuild. The question to me is, how will Quentin Johnston and J.K. Dobbins do at the end of the season? They're guys who are definitely prone to getting banged up, and the secondary usually gets cooked every year. So that's why they'd probably be around 15 for me.
I'm saying it's an overreaction. I think this team is physical, but they have a lot of their tough games ahead of them. When you look at their schedule, you know, you see the Saints, the Cardinals, the Chiefs, of course, twice. You see the Bengals, the Ravens, the Falcons, the Buccaneers. Like, you see all those teams that are going to put up points. And we haven't seen this Chargers team yet really have to navigate a ton of struggles against the Raiders. Everything was handed to them. We saw Gardner throw the ball backwards. We saw Zamir White fumble. We saw, you know, all these things, they kind of just bounce their way. And next thing you know, oh, you're already in field goal range. You don't have to make a crazy drive. And you're just going to go win this game against Panthers. We don't even really need to get into that. So I think it's a complete overreaction right now. I don't even know if they're really a top half team in the NFL. I think the defense has some good parts to it, but I still think it's a group that's not really there yet. And then the offense, I don't trust any of the receivers. I trust Justin Herbert, but I don't trust any of the receivers to get the job done once it comes to a point where, hey, you're down 10, there's 12 minutes to go, we got to score a touchdown right now, and then we got to get the ball back and go score again. I don't do that with this team at all. So I'm saying it's an overreaction. Next up, this one, we don't really have, you know, the exact science around, but it's been in the news a lot, so we might as well talk about it. It's Tua Tagovailoa and his third concussion in 3 years, another scary one where his fingers were pointing in directions they shouldn't. And so the headline here is that Tua should retire. I guess we can also change this, or not change this, but also do a secondary part that Tua will retire. Because should and will are obviously different questions there. But what do you think on this one, Scott?
This may be controversial because I haven't seen very many people agree with me at all. But I think this is an overreaction. I don't think Tua's going anywhere. I agree that he should definitely think about it. But here's the thing with Tua. The way he's been able to come back strong after all three nasty injuries and still be much watched TV, it tells me it's possibly a pride thing for Tua that even if he doesn't come back the same, he's going to finish out the contract. I think if he was worried about concussions, he would have retired 3 years ago. That doesn't mean he shouldn't hang it up, but you can only take so many hits before your life's changed forever. So I get why it's a topic. I just don't think it's going to happen. Yeah,
I agree with you there. I don't think this is going to be something he does end up retiring from. Like you said, should could be a different thing. I'm not going to answer that question specifically because I don't exactly know the brain stuff and the chemistry that's going on there. But I think it's going to take someone that's super close to him and one of his mentors and somebody that he really trusts to tell him, hey, you should do this in order for it to happen. Because even though they're not saying it, Mike McDaniel really wants him back. The Dolphins really want him back. They're not going to be like, hey, Lawrence Butler just sent one to the moon, I think, or sent one to the first row. But going back to Tua, I don't think it's going to happen. I think he'll be back playing after he's coming back from this IR stint, unless we see anything crazy with the concussion and symptoms regardless. I think he's back in the league, and I think the Dolphins' offense is back where it is once he's there. Next up, staying on the topic of quarterbacks, but very different discussion here. It's Derek Carr, the 2-0 Saints. They've been perhaps the best team in the NFL through 2 weeks of the season as far as performance-wise goes, maybe not resume. Regardless, the headline here is that Derek Carr will finish top five MVP candidate and New Orleans makes the playoffs.
I don't think he's going to end up in the MVP conversation. I think he's more comparable to a guy like Aaron Rodgers right now. They don't want him dropping back 40 times a game with that shitty O-line. They just want him to get the ball out quick. They have some better playmakers. They've been able to run the ball fantastically with Kamara. But the playoffs are always an option with them. They've had a pretty good defense so far. Again, we don't really know yet, but majority of these really terrible teams are in the NFC this season. That's pretty good for New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm saying it's an overreaction on the Derek Carr aspect of it. As much as I wish to say it wasn't, he's played great through 2 weeks, but I've seen this a couple of times in my lifetime where Derek Carr plays really good through the first 2 weeks. You think this guy's amazing, and then he just breaks down sometimes later in the season. I think playing in the South helps with that, though, because you're not really playing in those cold temperature games the way that he struggled in Kansas City and maybe Denver and some other spots, Pittsburgh earlier in his career. I think the more reasonable thing to say is that Alvin Kamara will be top five in offensive player of the year once it's all said and done, because Kubiak and the stuff that he's done there, taking out Carmichael and just throwing him in, and it's everything changed. The same guys, they didn't add anyone, didn't make any changes. But Kubiak's done all this with this offense so far. Kamara could be a guy that scores 20 touchdowns, has close to 1,800 yards once it's all said and done, all purpose, not just rushing. I know that's more than what he is. But the playoffs, I think, are definitely a good possibility. With their defense and the guys that they have there, it was an elite group or close to an elite group last year. They didn't really take any pieces away. And if their offense is above average, like they were a game or two out of the playoffs last year. If they play, as a top 12, top 15 offensive group, they're there. I think the biggest test will be Tampa, of course. And are they a better team than them? I don't know. So far, we'll see that in a couple of weeks when they play. But I think it'd be, a shame to not put New Orleans as a top seven team in the NFC right now. Next up, again, staying on the quarterback discussion, but we're going back to the bad side of it, and it's Bo Nix. He has been pretty rough in his first two games. Maybe doesn't have the greatest supporting cast, but we're saying it right away. Bo Nix is a bust.
First of all, I double-checked my notes. Denver plays at MetLife against the Jets. week four. So the London game must be week five. But Bo Nix, I think this is still an overreaction because Caleb Williams and Anthony Richardson were doing the same BS on Sunday, launching the ball into triple coverage. Young quarterbacks aren't supposed to look like CJ Stroud. I do think they reached for Bo Nix. I had him as a second round guy, but I don't think it's time to panic yet. I would definitely say Bo Nix is closer to a Sam Darnold than a Davis Mills or a Kenny Pickett. It's, if you were to put them all on a risk scale for quarterback prospects going in the second round.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and say that he is a bust. Maybe that's the part of me that absolutely hates the Broncos coming out, and that could be completely reasonable. But I don't even think this is necessarily a Bo Nix thing. I just think during this period that he's going to be a starting quarterback for this team, that he's just not going to be given any chance based off of the guys that he has around him. The O-line is bad. Now McGlinchey's out for 6 to 8 weeks. He was questionably their best offensive player, maybe. And he's, you know, gone perhaps a season now at this point. The running back is Javonte Williams, and he's had some cool runs, but he's not that good. The receiving core is terrible, probably the worst in the league outside of Cortland Sutton. He doesn't have a tight end, doesn't have a slot receiver. Like, he doesn't have guys that he can go to except for maybe Troy Franklin if they, you know, want to muster up some of that old duck chemistry.
They give him more than one target.
Exactly. But I just think Denver completely botched this era. I don't know why they didn't go offensive line at the draft this year. I don't think Bo Nix was the guy that they really extremely wanted either, which is kind of crazy to say. If you go O-line, then you give Zach Wilson or Stidham a year. You know, you kind of don't know what you have with that, but you do also kind of know what you have with that. They both have the ability to make plays, but also make mistakes. And I think Bo Nix is just an unnecessary, you know, not benefactor, but the opposite of a benefactor that, you know, he's getting negatively outputted from this because he just doesn't have anything to do. And I think Sean Payton stays throughout this, but I think Bo Nix is the guy who kind of gets looked at as a scapegoat once we get, you know, a year or two down the line.
For sure. They thought he was Drew Brees, but you don't realize how smart Drew Brees was.
Yeah. And I think another thing too is, say you put him in San Francisco, and I know, you know, the argument all the time is, oh, you put any quarterback in San Francisco and they'll succeed. But I think Bo Nix definitely could be a guy that would be working there. We wouldn't have this conversation 2 weeks into the season with Bo Nix if he had players like that around him, is really what I'm trying to say there. Mm-hmm. So give him some players, not necessarily five All-Pros. I'd hate to see the Denver Broncos have that many All-Pros. But, you know, he could be a player if you just give him a shot, and they're just not giving him a shot. Next up, talking about the Packers offense and their head coach, Matt LaFleur. Packers offense is more on the floor than it is on Jordan Love.
I think this is our first big underreaction of the video. Don't get me wrong. Jordan Love has drastically improved, but I totally agree with Matt LaFleur being the most important piece of this team. The way he can scheme open one out of four of their great young receivers is very reminiscent of his predecessor, Sean McVay. And look what happened this week. They took down a pretty good offensive team, even though they made lots of mistakes, Indianapolis, and they ran all over them. So good work for Matt LaFleur, that's for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with this as well, too. I think it's more of not a shot on Love, like you said, but more on big props to Matt LaFleur and what he – I saw, forget exactly who said it. It might have been the commentator in the game, but it was a great way to adjust to what you have and what you don't have by Matt LaFleur. He realized, hey, we have Malik Willis who can run, and we're facing a Colts defense who just allowed a shit ton of rushing yards against a 30-year-old Joe Mixon. Yeah, let's run the ball with the guy that we just paid $40 million to and our backup quarterback that runs a 4-4, 4-5 in Malik Willis. They did that all game, and it worked completely. And when Malik Willis threw the ball, it was completely fine because he, you know, they had eight guys in the box or seven guys in the box, and there wasn't, you know, expecting a pass too high, whatever it is. I think another thing, just going back to LaFleur in the past and not just this specific game, I look at the receivers from the Packers, and I, you know, I see Christian Watson as a guy who is great downfield, but maybe has some flaws in his part of his game. I see Jaden Reed as a great playmaker, but maybe some flaws in his game. Same thing with Romeo Dobbs. Same thing with Dontavian Wicks. You see these guys come out of nowhere for Green Bay because partially Love's really good at making throws, but also mainly because LaFleur just knows exactly what to do with these guys. And I think we're seeing one of the greatest minds in football right now in LaFleur. And there's a reason why the Packers went to the playoffs last year, went to the playoffs, you know, with Rodgers multiple times when he was there. And it's because LaFleur is just great at navigating the talent that's on the roster. So I give it up to him. Last one that we got, we're talking Arizona and the Cardinals and their great offense through the first two games of the season, 1-1, but put up 28 or 30 points against Buffalo in week one, and then put up 41 when it's only 3 40-point outings from teams this year against the Rams. So the question is the Cardinals offense a top 7 group?
This might be an overreaction if the running game slows down like it has every single year. But so far, I think this is the ceiling. This is right on the money. I think Kyler Murray, excellent second half of his career, in my opinion, for the same reasons I thought he was going to be an elite center fielder for the A's, because despite his injury history, he seems to always come back stronger, faster, and more accurate than the last season. He just had the second best game in Cardinals history. Only Kurt Warner. Old Kurt Warner did it when they went to the Super Bowl. They just blew out a team that went deep into the playoffs. Him, Marv, McBride, I think it's a special trio. So we'll see. They're going to need the running game to be a top 10 offense, but I definitely think it's above average so far.
I'm going to say it's a slight overreaction, but I still think this Cardinals group is a super respectable team that can end up as a top 10 to, you know, even 8 or 9 group. Once it's all said and done, I think the run game is extremely lethal with James Conner and the threat that Kyler Murray provides with his legs. Their offensive line is young and built up from the past few years that they've taken first round draft picks. But when I look at the weapons, that's kind of where I take a step back and I'm like, maybe not. Because what if they get down in a game? And I know Marvin Harrison is good, and I know McBride are solid, but they're not the most proven guys. So they don't have a ton of chemistry with Kyler quite yet. McBride's in what, year 2 or year 3? Marvin Harrison's in his third game. We saw, you know, it didn't really work out in the first game. Outside of those two guys, it's Michael Wilson. It's Greg Dortch. Is he still there? Like, there's guys that I just don't really want to put my faith in quite yet. So that's why I'm saying it's a slight overreaction. But if the run game stays the way that it's been in the first two games, I could definitely see it being a group that we're looking at the end of the year and say, damn, their defense sucked, but that offense is what won them a ton of games. Mm-hmm. That does it for overreaction, underreaction. Moving on to the second half.
All right. We'll start off the second half with another Heisman watch. Not that crazy of a week. Not a lot of ranked matchups, but let's just get into it with the honorable mentions. Miller Moss had a bye week. This is a big week for him at Michigan. Just like last week, I also have Travis Hunter still in the honorable mentions. They didn't really do much offensively against Colorado State, but as long as he's playing both ways, he's going to be in the conversation. That's for sure. So making his debut into the top 5, it's Jackson Dart, quarterback from Ole Miss. Another game with 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. They dominated at Wake Forest, and it's a consistency thing for Jackson Dart at this point. He's going to have a lot of opportunities in the Lane Kiffin offense, and I think the SEC guys should be graded a little easier. So we'll see once they get into conference play. Number 4, I got Quinn Ewers. He's going to drop down from the top spot a little bit after the injury against UTSA, but they did look fine with Arch Manning. If Quinn can come back and play well against Oklahoma and Georgia in a couple weeks, the odds will drastically improve. He'll shoot up to the top. Number 3 is my guy, Ashton Jeanty, running back from Boise State, coming off the bye week, so I dropped him for now. But he's got 460 yards and 9 touchdowns in just 2 games. He should do the same against Portland State on Saturday. Finally get a tune-up game, right? We freaking needed one for the offense. Number 2, Cam Ward, quarterback for Miami, another 5 touchdowns against Ball State, as expected, and he'll probably do the same thing at South Florida this week. And the top spot, it's going to go to Jalen Milroe now, quarterback of Alabama. He beats the snot out of Wisconsin on the road, 42-10. I don't know if he can keep this pace going during conference play, but 270, 5 touchdowns, 0 turnovers against a great defense is enough to bump up his stock while some of the bigger guys are on bye weeks. So a very interesting race. There's still about 10 guys still alive. I'm not killing anyone off the list yet. I'll let you know when I do. And now let's get into the schedule for this week, because a lot of great ranked matchups unlike this past week. We'll start off Friday night. How about your guys again playing on a short week? Stanford at Syracuse should be a really interesting game. But if you're not interested in that, if you're Kyle, the big one's going to be number 24, Illinois at number 22, Nebraska. It's two great defensive minds, Lovie Smith and Matt Rhule, going at it. And also a very big test for the freshman quarterback, Dylan Raiola. So I'll check up on that one. Friday morning, 9 a.m., one game I want to check in on is NC State at number 21, Clemson. It's currently minus 20 points for Clemson, but like I said, I really want to check up on it because Clemson can be a very wish-washy team, but so far the offense does look good. 12:30, it's one of the biggest games of the season so far. It's 11 USC at 18 Michigan. Massive test for Miller Moss in the big house against an excellent defense. So if he plays well, I'm possibly moving this guy up as a first round grade on my board. This could be massive for him.
Is he, he's not this year, is he?
Redshirt junior.
Oh, mm-hmm. I didn't know. This is his first year starting?
Yes.
He started at USC the bowl last game. Year?
Yeah. He played the bowl game for Caleb and had like 470 yards. So he's on my watch list, but still around a fourth round range. And now he's looking like a dude. That's for sure, especially with guys like Carson Beck struggling so far. Right after that game, though, 1 o'clock, it's the matchup of the 25-year-old quarterbacks. It's number 12 Utah and Cam Rising, who is expected to play now. I was worried about that one. They're traveling to 14 Oklahoma State with Alan Bowman, the guy from Oregon and Texas Tech. The winner will hold first place in the wild, wild Big 12 because Arizona and Kansas lost. So interesting race. Even ASU is still alive, technically. It's going to be a fun finish, and I have no clue who's going to the playoff from that conference. Probably only one, though. And the last big one, 4:30 p.m., it's number 6 Tennessee at number 16 Oklahoma. Now it's a rivalry game. Interesting. This one should be a shootout. Nico Lamaliava. Lamaliva, along those lines. I've gotten closer and closer to it, but hopefully I eventually get it. And Jackson Arnold, that's the quarterback matchup. We're still trying to figure out if any of these guys are legit yet. Hopefully it is a shootout, and these guys improve their stock because they're young quarterbacks in the SEC. We know how it goes when you have a bad quarterback. Guys get fired, and you lose to Alabama and Georgia. So this is going to be a fun weekend. That's what I got for you. Any other notes you got?
No, just looking forward to some better games than last week. We didn't really get treated to any, you know, crazy games on the schedule last week. I know next week, in week 5, there's one circled, I believe at 4:30 when we got Bama, Georgia. But we still got week 4 ahead of us. There's going to be some things that, you know, happen next week that shake everything up. Maybe Georgia and Bama lose, and they're both one loss teams going into that game. Will they? Probably not, but you never know. It's college football. Kirby Smart and the Dogs didn't look that great against Kentucky this past weekend. But yeah, it's called football. Crazy things happen, and that's why we bet on it. That's our layups and bowl predictions now headed into it now. Starting off last week, I had double red, Skyler had double green.
Yeah.
I had the Niners minus 6. I didn't think that they would struggle the way they did, and it was rough, man. The offense just never really got going. The defense didn't look as good as I expected it and didn't make Sam Darnold see as many ghosts as what I expected to see. And so that is a red for me. Skyler had the Jets betting on his own team, minus 3.5. But it got close.
It was a must win. But
the Jets do get the win there and pull off the 3.5-point favorite there. This week, I liked your pick, but I decided to go with Tampa Bay minus 6.5 versus Denver. Denver, I think, well-documented, one of the worst teams in the league. Tampa's been off to a great start, just coming off of a win against the Lions in Detroit by 4 points. I think they'll be just fine to cover by a touchdown against Tampa.
I'll definitely be picking Tampa Bay, but what worried me is they've been abandoning the run game pretty early on in games. So I went with Houston, minus 2.5 at Minnesota. We just talked about it. It's not that Minnesota is a fraud. They have great players all around. It's just that Houston can win ugly games. That's the kind of team they are. And I expect a very similar game here. They should win by a touchdown.
Yeah, moving on to our bold predictions. I had New England plus 150. So close. They got into overtime, just couldn't get the job done because Geno was surgical for the Seahawks this past weekend. Skyler had Cleveland over Jacksonville plus 145. That did happen. Good job to not double it this time. And just stick with the one that hit this week. I have Arizona plus 130 versus Detroit. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. And when it plays that way, I think it favors Arizona more than it does Detroit. It's a one score game coming down to it. I would trust Arizona's offense in that situation. So give me Arizona plus 130. It's going to be a tough game. I wouldn't be shocked if they lose, but that's my upset pick of the week.
I'm going to go with a college football pick that's pretty interesting to me because I doubt it will be a shootout. That's Cal. The Cal Golden Bears opening up ACC play at Florida State. I am going to pick them to win, though. Florida State's 0-3. I've been seeing so many Cal players on Twitter with these AI pictures of saying they're going to turn Doak Walker Stadium into Woke Stadium. And
I did see that. Yeah.
It's hilarious, no, I didn't man. See that, yeah. I mean, Cal just beat the crap out of San Diego State, and they're no slouch. Obviously, we know this. Some of the East Coast people don't. If they can get past the travel and the loud crowd noise, they should win this game by 20 points, I think.
Yeah, they got it back too. And that's what you need in college football on road games to be able to run the ball. So, or quarterback. Regardless, that's going to do it though for episode 210. Next week on episode 211, we'll talk baseball, we'll talk football. Mm-hmm. Probably still going to wait on basketball, but expect more of the same next week. Maybe power rankings for both the leagues, who's in your 12 college football playoff stuff going on, as we do another status check next week on episode 211.
Oh, yeah. Before we end, did you know that for the first time since 1993, the Jets are favored by a touchdown against New England?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Makes sense, though.
Really crazy. I mean, I think I that was Drew Bledsoe's first couple of years. Maybe second year.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got there for you.
Yeah. I will say, just because you're favored by a touchdown doesn't mean you're going to win the game. Baltimore knows that all too well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm aware of New England and how much pain they bring me every season. So let's just get through it alive. How about that?
Yep.
All right.
All matters.
I'll be back next week for 211 with similar stuff. Let's go. Let's get some wins. Let's get some wins for our teams and be happy like today on the podcast.
Yep.
All right. Adios.
Later.